Let's chant verse 21.
Veda vinashinam nityam
ya enam ajam avyayam
katham sapurusha parta
katham sapurusha parta
kam ghatayati hantikam
kam ghatayati hantikam.
Veda avinashinam nityam yaha enam ajam avyayam katam saha purushaha partha kam ghatayati hanti kam. Sunday. Okay. So now he's continuing on the last quarter of the last verse that we did. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire, the ayam, this atma, the self, when this body is killed, hanyamane sharire, when the body, the sharira, the body is killed, this atma, this self is not killed. So, right, I was talking about how Arjuna was really suffering, wanting to leave the battlefield and take sannyasa because he realized that all the people that he loved, he was going to kill or cause to be killed. And any joy that he would get from whatever possessions, whatever overlordship of a huge area and having all the wealth that he could possibly imagine, it was all became meaningless if this was the price. He just saw all that he would be gaining just dripping in the blood of the people that were dear to him. And so Krishna uses the most extreme example to kill or be killed or to cause to kill. First of all, addressing Arjuna's terrible grief and fear and terror of the situation that he found himself in. But also in the Shastra, we often use as an example the most extreme case. Because you could say, you know, well, those people, you could use a lesser verb, you know, a less violent verb. But then you might say, yeah, but what about killing? What about in this most extreme situation? Is it true there also? And so we just go to the extreme situation and have the extreme situation include all other situations. So you go the farthest you can go. That's a very, very commonly done. So killing in terms of a dharma or in terms of the worst possible action maybe you can conceive of is to take the life of another, you know, to take the life of another. And so that is the example that's being used. So here in this first, the verse that we just did, the example is in the passive. When your body dies, when this body dies, the self, the Atma, doesn't die. So that's how he first deals with it. And now he says, talking now about the one who knows the self, the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, the one who knows myself, who I actually am, says Veda, the one Veda, the one who knows, he who, yaha Veda enam, the one who knows enam atmanam, the one who knows the self. I mean, so if the one who knows yourself, if you know yourself, which is the self, which is avinashinam, which is free from vinasha, free from destruction, that you take the word vinasha and put an a in front of it in Sanskrit, that will negate the verb, negate the noun. So if I say vinasha or vinashinam, that means the one who is subject to destruction. If I say avinasha, the one who's not subject to destruction. This is a little tidbit. Another, so say if the word begins with a vowel like atma. Atma means the self. Anatma means the not-self. What is not the self? So for somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, they take the anatma, what is not the self, to be the atma, right? So here, avinashinam. So remember last class we were talking about the shed bhava vikaras. Those are those sixfold modifications that any living entity is going to go through. You know? Yeah, cool. Yeah. Any living entity will go through these six modifications of becoming. So the first, you know, is you're born, jayate, you're born. Then, so there's the first, right? It says you've got birth and death on either end. So you're born. Then you exist, right? Asti. Then you go through puberty. You go through modification. Then vardhate. You grow up. You grow up, and then you go through puberty. Right? That's how it goes. So you grow up, vardhate, you grow up. And then viparinamate, you go through puberty. And then after you've gone through puberty, now you're an adult. Right? So now that's, here we go, you're an adult. And from that point on, it's vinasha. it's aparinamate. From that point on, it's apakshiyate. It's decline. Right? From the time, so when you're 20, 24 or so, from that period on, it's just a slow decline until vinasha. Vinasha means destruction, death. Right? So those are the six shed bhava vikaras, modifications. So he's using this word here, avinasha, avinashinam, the one who is not subject to that final, you know, moment of destruction, of death. So he says, the one who knows the self as nitya. Nitya means free from time. Just picking up this word again. The one who knows the self as nitya, being free from time, and avinashinam, free from destruction, free from death, indestructible, timeless. So one who knows oneself as that, and then he brings in ajam. Ajam means free from birth. So you've got ajam, avinashinam, and nityam, that which is free from time. So the one who knows oneself to be that, and to be also avyayam. Avyayam means, again, there's no decline. No, na vyeti means you don't leave your original condition. Na vyeti. And so in the middle between birth and death, there is no decline. There's no pakshiyate. There's no leaving your original condition. So you just simply are free from time. So this was the last two verses were in a sense dealing with this, and now he's bringing that whole thing together. He's summarizing it. But he's summarizing it now for you, the one who knows. So the one who, yaha veda enam, the one who knows this self, yourself, as being free in this way, totally indestructible. You're never born, you don't die, and in the middle you don't change. And so the being you are puranaha from the previous verse, you're puranaha, you're ever fresh, ever new as you are. So the one who knows themselves to be this way, katam saha purushaha, hey Partha is just a name for Arjuna. So he says, katam saha purushaha, hey Partha, how can a person like this, this jnani, this person who has knowledge, the person who knows themselves in this way, then they say, kam ghatayati hantikam, how can such a person cause somebody to kill? And not only that, who can they cause to kill, and whom can they kill? Kam means whom in the accusative. So whom can they cause to kill? Because this is Arjuna's fear. I'm going to make all of my soldiers kill all of these people. But who can the self, the one who knows the self, how can they cause anyone to kill? And also, how can they even themselves kill anyone? Who are they going to kill? And how? How can they do that? How can they perform that action? So whom can they kill? And how can they cause somebody to kill? So then the question comes in, because there's quite a commentary on this that says, well, the self is different than the enlightened person, after all. And the enlightened person, the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, is the one who's here with this body, and I have arms and legs, and I can certainly, kill. I know the self, I know myself doesn't do anything, but I'm talking about me, this body, who does all of these things, can do all of these things. But then the question is, who are you? Who are you really? Are you the body who has hands and legs? Or are you the mind, or you're the vak, the speech that says you go kill this person, Or are you the one who's brandishing the sword and takes the life of another person? Is that who you are? And if you say yes, then you're still a samsari. You don't have self-knowledge. Because when we say self-knowledge, if the question is not who, not the self that now you know about, right? Now there's a self that now I know about that self, and that self is me, the self that I know about. But I'm thinking of, I know about this self as an object of knowledge. We're not talking about an object of knowledge. This is a different kind of knowledge. It's a very easy mistake to make, even in terms of gaining this knowledge. It's an easy mistake to make, because when I think of gaining knowledge, how as a human being I gain knowledge. There's two little words. I'll just throw in some Sanskrit for some of the students who know these words, just to keep you going with your Sanskrit. But I'm saying everything in English, so never worry about it. You're just getting some what we call samskaras. I'm implanting these little Sanskrit words into your brain, But don't worry about them, because I translate everything. These words are vridhivyapti and palavyapti. They have to do with, how do I gain knowledge as a human being? How do I gain knowledge? And this is the only way we gain knowledge, really. So let's just look at it, how it is. How do I work as a human being? Well, first, to gain knowledge, I have to generate a thought modification, which then I illumine, right? So say, for instance, if I use my eyes to perceive like I'm looking at the clock, right? But I need to use my eyes to gain a thought modification of the clock, which then I am aware of. Actually, I'm only aware of my thought modifications, right? Because I use my sense organs to give me a thought modification, or I'm recalling memory and I have a thought modification, or I have an imagination, it's a thought modification. I have a meditative experience, it's a thought modification. So everything we know basically is whatever vritti or thought modification is taking place in my mind. So to gain knowledge, I have to use an adequate means of knowledge in order to gain what we would call a thought modification, which is true to the object of knowledge, right? And so say my eyes are working properly, I have good vision, and I look up at that clock, and I don't see two of them, I only see one. I only see one because my eyes are still in good enough condition, even without my glasses, to only see one clock. If your eyes are, on their way out, so to speak, you're born with bad vision, you look at without your glasses, you look at the clock and you see two. You know there's not supposed to be two clocks, but you do see two clocks, and so you have to get glasses or something to bring everything back into focus. But somebody will tell you, honest to God, there aren't two clocks there. There's only one clock. There's only one clock. I promise you there's only one clock. You need glasses. Then you have to get glasses, and then your vision will be appropriate. So say your vision is appropriate. You have 20/20 vision or good enough to see clearly. Then your mind utilizes your eyes to gain a thought modification which is true to the object, at least within this realm of reality that we experience through our sense organs. We can say, yes, there's a clock there, or yes, there's a glass of water here. But for me to say there's a glass of water here or a clock here or I'm looking at all of you, I have to use my mind to gain a thought modification, and then that thought is known. Right? The thought is known. First I have to gain the experience so that I can know it. And you gain any experience through the modification of these thought modifications. And say, if you're watching your mind, we say in meditation, just watch your thoughts. Okay, this thought comes, this thought is known, it goes, this thought is known, this thought is known, this thought is known. So that's the situation. And when we want to learn about something, we have to have a thought modification, which then we know. Okay. So now, if I want to gain self-knowledge, what will I think? I need to have a thought modification. I need to have a means of knowledge that will give me the experience of myself so that I can know it, right? If it makes sense. That's how we know things. We gain a thought modification through a means of knowledge that we use, and then I illumine that thought modification and it is known to me. And so now, this is how we, it's just putting in language how we gather knowledge in the world. Even when we think about meditation, we will use this formula until we correct it. We'll use this formula. First, I have to gain the experience through practicing japa or pranayama or just the various devices that we have for gaining a meditative experience. So I use devices to gain a meditative experience, and then that meditative experience is known. Right? So then I have a subject-object relationship with this meditative experience, which is supposed to be me. So now I know myself because I'm aware of myself as an object. That is the problem. That's the crux of the problem that has to be corrected in our understanding of Advaita Vedanta. It has to be corrected because we can't know myself in the same way that we know everything else. It's not like this. I have to know myself, you know, in the way that we know this or the way that we know, no. I have to know myself in a way that is different than how we know everything else. And so we don't have an example, you have to know yourself like this. No, we have to know ourselves in a way that is different. So let me tell you why. It is because your self-experience as conscious, the conscious being that is the me, this is already here. It's already absolutely present. Whereas, look, if I'm looking at the clock, I see the clock. But if I look this way, there's no clock experience there. I can have a memory of what I see, but I'm not having an experience of the clock. If I have to look at the water, now I have an experience of this nice glass of water. But if I look away, that experience is not there. You can recall it by memory. But that's not the nature of yourself. You can't look away from yourself. You are always the one who is present, no matter what the experience is. You cannot gain any greater experience of yourself than you already that is already present. And then everybody would go, oh no. because we're only viewing myself we're as though looking at myself or experiencing myself within the mood of the mind, you know? And so because my mind takes itself to be me and me to be itself. And so if the mind is depressed, I'm depressed. If the mind is angry, I'm angry. If the mind is kind of dully neutral, I am dully neutral. So whatever is going on in my mind, whatever is the condition of the vritti, the thought modification in my mind, I just take myself to be that. And so that's one big problem. And then another big problem is the bliss factor. The bliss factor, like if I say to you, and I wonder how many of you have thought this because it's just like an immediate association. If I say yourself, who you are, is already 100% completely present. It is not covered in any way. You are completely present to yourself. You could not be more present to yourself than you are right now. I'm not experiencing any bliss. Where's the bliss? Where's the bliss? You know? Yeah. Where's the bliss? In fact, once when I was first with Swamiji, I was up in the Himalayas at his ashram at the, and his teaching was just so powerful, it would just put you kind of into an altered state, and I was, it was one very intense, very powerful class, and I just went back to my room and I was just sitting with myself, and I had kind of a very, very profound, almost like a samadhi-like experience, so I was way too new to even know that. But it was just a very profound experience of just kind of just being me. And I was looking for a bliss experience that didn't match that, you know. And so I was kind of shaken up by what was that then, you know. And so then I went to Swamiji and I told him about this experience, you know, that I had. And then I went, where's the bliss? There wasn't it. You're supposed to have this big bliss experience or something, you know. He laughed. He used to laugh, and then I say he was very pleased. He's very happy, you know, that I had that thing. But he laughed and he said, "No, no, it's okay. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. You'll see. You'll understand." You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is that in terms of your own nature, who you are, what we mean, the word is ananda. There really is nothing more beloved than your own being right now. Right now. There is nothing more beloved. But it's subtle and it has to be recognized. And that beloved, what is the most dear? It's called prem. What is most dear? You know, what is most dear, what is most loved, you know, is not going to be sorrow. It's not sorrow, but it's something that is so whole and complete, and there is nothing else like it. There's nothing else like it because it's, you are not an object in the world to say, oh, the ananda, the fullness of yourself. You know, it's like this, like when you're really, really happy, or the ananda of yourself is like, when you're having an extreme experience of sorts. And so unfortunately they translate this word ananda as bliss, which is an extreme experience. But the nature of yourself is much more than any extreme experience. It's much more than that. It's just other than that. Extreme experiences come and go. You know, any experience, in fact, including the most extreme experiences, come and go. Your being doesn't come and go. So what is that most beloved that is present right now needs to be recognized. And that's one reason that we need Ashantavritti, because we are so used to only focusing on the experiences and the emotions and the feelings that are taking place in our mind. That's what we're used to focusing on. We're not used to focusing on the one who is present to those experiences. And the nature of your being is so whole and complete and so beautiful. I mean, the beauty of your, the simplicity of your being is not something that can be compared to different bliss states or happiness or sadness or anything. It's not comparable to that. You are what you are and there's nothing else like it. Which is good, because that means that it becomes a little easier for us to recognize the fullness of my own nature. But what I'm pointing to now is, how do I know that? And you're not ever going to know yourself in the form of a vritti or a thought modification, because you already are 100% present as the very being of that thought modification. Kind of like the clay is 100% present to the pot, and the pot really wants to have an experience of the clay. What is it going to do? Where is it going to look? Imagine the poor pot looking around for the clay. I'm clay, I know. I'm being taught that I'm clay. Let me have an experience of clay. You know, let me meditate on it. Let me have an experience of the clay. So the The pot, which is nothing but clay, is trying to gain an experience of the clay, you know, and it doesn't work. Right? You're trying to have a vritti, a thought modification. So in gaining self-knowledge, it is rather than the acquisition of a thought modification, a knowledge vritti of something, you know, so that it can be known. It's like the mind has to gain a thought modification of that, and then I have to illumine it. That's not what is happening here. What is happening here is that the mind itself needs to be able to differentiate itself from the experience that is already here. And so instead of being the gain of a thought modification, you know, we say it's ajnana nivritti, it's the removal of the ignorance on the part of the mind, which has caused my mind, you know, to take itself to be me, and then it looks for an experience of me. It takes itself to be one with me, right? And so I don't count anymore because it is me, right? And now it has to gain an experience of me. And is it going to look inside or outside or up or down or go into a more subtle state so I can now have an experience of me? But the one who wants the experience of me is me. That is the problem. And so the whole teaching methodology is different. The teaching methodology itself is helping you to objectify, you know, what that which can be objectified. Objectifying what can be objectified, and then recognize the one who's left. Now, that's also interesting. How do I recognize the one who's left? Because that would be a subject-object relationship, right? And that's not going to work because I can't objectify myself to recognize as an object the me that is left after I've objectified my body and mind and sense organs like we were doing this morning. So how is that going to work? You know? How am I going to know myself? Well, you're going to know yourself because you are the very consciousness and the very knowledge because of which everything is known. Like say I have any given thought. Say you have a thought of the clock or a thought of the wall or whatever. You have any given thought. That thought has, you know, some different aspects. One is the content of the thought in terms of what you're looking at. You know, like the clock is known, the wall is known, you are all known. The other aspect is the knownness itself. This is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. Right? We don't think about that. We don't think about the fact that all my experience comes into conscious being. That every experience I have, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. What never changes is the is-knownness. The is-knownness is me. That's self-evident me. My own am-ness. Think of it like that. If I say, looking at this, you know, all of you in the room, this is, you know. In fact, every experience I have is, you know, I never think about the being, the self-evident being of me, conscious being, is what remains timeless. You're never away from it. You're never away from your self-experience. Your self-experience is what is the very being of all experience. It's what allows everything to be known, which allows everything to exist. None of this really exists that you experience. It comes into being and goes out of being just like that. It's just bordered. Everything you experience is bordered by non-existence. It comes into being, goes out of being, comes into being, goes out of being. You know, everything that you experience, it is known for a moment. Then the next vritti comes, that is known. Next thought, that is known, that is known, that is known. You know, they don't own knownness. They don't own consciousness. Because then when that thought goes, the consciousness goes along with it and it remains conscious. It's a conscious thought. So let the conscious thought go its own way. It's a little person thought going its own way. That's not our experience. Our experience is that all experience, without exception, you know, enjoys this common denominator of being. When it is there, it is. And when it is there, it is known. The is-knownness is consciousness. I am the is-knownness. I am the consciousness which is just identified as belonging to the thought in so many different ways. That's the self-ignorance. But we'll say what the Shastra will say, Krishna will be saying, get rid of the entire creation, everything that's objectifiable. And what is left is me. Is knownness that I have superimposed, that self-evident, self-shining, which I give over, my mind usurps to belong to it, you know? That is me. And I am there present as my own being, conscious being. I'm present of the self as the very self of every experience that I have. You know, so I'm not there. I'm already there. But the problem is, because of self-ignorance, my mind takes it to be me. And so what do we have to do is make the mind recognize that actually it is known and it comes and goes, along with all experience, right? It is known, this is known, this is known, this is just a flow of experiences that are taking place in the is-knownness, which, another way of saying it, is my own self-evident me. Who is the one who is always here? Is me. Am I known or not? Say, yes, I'm known. I don't know who I am, but I know that I am here, and I also know that I don't really know who I am. So I'm known and unknown. You know, I know myself as a conscious, existent being, but I don't know exactly, you know, my own nature. I know my own nature as I'm conscious, existent being, but I don't know that I'm timeless. I don't know that I'm the very conscious being, the knownness that everything in the creation enjoys. So, to know that, how to know it? We can't know it as a vritti because I'm already present as the clay of the pot. I'm already present as the very being of every vritti that I have. So now say you have a meditative vritti, a bliss vritti. Now you're the self of that bliss vritti. And then the bliss vritti means thought modification. So you're the self of that very profound thought modification, which goes away. And then you need to get it back again so you can get yourself back again. Because I was here for a moment and then I left. I got to experience myself for a moment, you know, and then it went away. That's not what's happening, right? You're the self of that meditative experience. And you're the self who's there illumining the next experience that you have and the next and the next and the next. But from your own standpoint, you simply are. You're not going through any modification at all. And so really, it's not about having a bliss vritti, a bliss thought modification, or any thought modification. It is about recognizing myself in every thought modification. I am never not there. But I have to recognize myself as being there in every thought modification and every emotion and being free of every emotion, of every experience. I am the conscious being of every experience and I am free of every experience. Why? Because every experience comes into being and goes out of being, right? So it's not adding anything to me. I am its being, you know. Try to take the being out of your thought modification. It's like if we mistake a snake for a rope for a snake, which is a mistake that can happen. We use it as an example all the time. So you're walking around and walking along at dusk and you mistake a rope lying there in the road, you see it as a snake. Because it has the same bends, the same length, you project a snake onto it. And so you react and respond to the snake, all your feelings, everything. You're experiencing a snake. Okay. Now, let's take the rope out of the snake. Let's just pull the rope out of the snake. What do we have? We don't have anything, because the only thing that's really there is a rope. Right? There isn't really any snake, but then we experience a snake. That's the nature of this creation, as we'll be seeing. You experience it, but that doesn't mean, you know, that it is of the same order of reality as you are, right? You're the rope. You're not the snake. Think of a dream, just to kind of understand this really extraordinary relationship we have with our experience. When the dream comes, you have a dream, right? Everyone in the dream itself enjoys existence. It has being, right? It exists. And all of the little jivas in the dream, all of the individuals in the dream, they're all conscious beings having their own experiences, you know, as long as the dream is there. But when you wake up from the dream, right, all of those names and forms, all of the beings, the whole universe, dream universe, and all of the beings in it, they're gone. All of them, like that, they're gone. And you know what? Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened to you. The one who was the character you were identified with in the dream, that character is completely gone. Right? But you're not gone. The self of that character is not gone. The self of that dream is not gone. The actuality, the sat-chit, the conscious being from which that dream comes, which is the very clay of the pot, it's the rope of the snake, it's what is actually there in terms of being, in terms of truth. Nothing happens at all. And so this dream which we experience, and it is so real and multidimensional and has such an order to it, such as so much is going on in that, that it has a value from its own standpoint, within its own standpoint, but in terms of the order of reality that it enjoys, it's what we call mithya. Its reality is totally dependent upon the actuality of my being. I am actually what is there. That's why when this totally dependent reality called mithya, that we have so many examples of, snake as an example, clay pot is another type of example, your imagination is another example. Your daydreams are an example. You know, these things have their own reality when they're taking place, and you're as though existing within them. But when they disappear, and it's not like they crumble brick by brick. They don't crumble brick by brick. They're gone. Your experience is, wow, that was amazing. That, what a dream that was. But your experience is not that you've lost yourself or something real has happened, because there hasn't, nothing has happened. Nothing has happened because nothing has happened, you know? Even though you experience it, you're experiencing the dream, but there's no substance for something to happen. What the truth of the whole thing just remains absolutely untouched. Can understand that when we talk about the dream. Now you have to understand that now in this waking state. It's different for us to understand that in the dream, because when we're understanding it not when we're in the dream, but when we've woken up from the dream. I said, yeah, that's amazing. You know, I was this character in the dream and all of these things happened, and then I woke up and it's all gone and I'm still here. Nothing really happened. You know, I can see it. I can feel it. It's my experience. You know? But think about it now, that character in the dream needs to gain knowledge. The character in the dream needs to gain self-knowledge. And they're not going to want to disassemble the whole wake up from the dream when they're in the dream, because it's all too real. You know, like what if I said, listen, I'm going to give you all self-knowledge right now. And when you get it, this whole thing's going to vanish. There won't be anything left at all. The whole universe will be gone. Just like that. Because we experience it, it's not real. So let me give you knowledge and boom, it's going to be gone. Okay, all of it, everything. All that would be left is just your being. So how many people would be running out the door right now? Or Swamiji will say like this, no. Let's wait a little while. Okay, that's just really too radical. Let's wait. I'm not quite ready for that now. That's right. The dream character is not going to be so ready for that either. That dream character then has to be taught. You in this waking state, as long as you've taken this body, it has a life to live. So knowledge isn't going to take your life away. This knowledge, you know, this body is what we call, you've joined into Ishwara's creation. You have a life to live. We'll see that in the next verses coming up. You have a life to live. Right. But when that life is gone, then we'll see. Do you take another birth or you'll have knowledge and you'll just abide as Ishwara, which we'll see that. Okay. So you have to gain now in this waking state, you have to see that this body, mind, sense organs, which as long as it is here, you have complete identification with, as I feel my body, I use my sense organs, I use my mind, I'm in relationship with you, I participate in the laws of this creation, you know, I am here. I have to recognize, yes, that's not going to go away. You're not going to gain knowledge and say, oh, I'm not here anymore. You know, oh, I'm not the Atma, I'm just seeing the Atma, I don't really see this creation. People say this. It's really, because I'm not supposed to see this creation. Because I'm not my eyes, I'm not my ears, I'm not my body, I'm not my mind. So now I have self-knowledge, so none of that's there. Oh, it's all there. Everything is there. Everything is fine. But I have to recognize the relationship between the totality of this experience, which includes my body, mind, sense organs, all my relationships, all of the laws of the universe. I have to recognize in that in relationship to me, because I am the conscious being, you know, which all of this enjoys, which myself, I'm not doing anything. My eyes are seeing, my ears are hearing, my mind is thinking, my emotions are feeling, my prana is revving up. Okay? All of these things are here to be experienced. But they're experienced from their own standpoint, like the mind, the thought modification is experienced if it is here. The thought modification is experienced if it is here. If it is not here, it's not experienced. Can you see that? Do you think that it's experiencing itself by itself? Like you have a thought modification and that thought modification is known. Right? But say the thought modification is not there. Then what is there? The light itself. The conscious being is there. And that is its own experience. And what is that experience is not a dual subject-object experience. It's the me experience. Me. It isn't about me knowing me. It's about me, the self that I am, being its own self-evident experience because I am consciousness itself. I am existence itself. And so that's unwavering. I'm not an object to be experienced. I am the me that is here always as the self, the very content of every experience that I have. That self-knowledge is to recognize this one who is the self of whatever experience it is. I can do so many things to have exalted experiences which have their own usefulness. Even something like yoga gives, in a sense, what I would call almost an exalted physical state because of the balance, the type of balance and shanti it brings to the body and mind. It gives a beautiful state of being from the body, from the standpoint of the body and the mind and the prana, that is valuable. As long as you're a jiva running around here, it's nice. Jiva means a person, the one who transmigrates. It's nice to have a body that is very healthy and balanced, and a mind, and to have a certain cleanliness of energy and being able to work through your emotional problems and all. That's a beautiful, wonderful thing, you know. But there's something more, and that is the nature of you, the one who is enjoying this beautiful body and enjoying a mind that enjoys some prana and some cleanliness. Who is the me? We're talking about self-knowledge here. I am already completely present. And so I am the self-experience. I'm not going to gain a new one. I already am that. And so knowledge is differentiating, having the mind, you know, turn toward, through direction, turn toward myself, differentiating me, differentiating itself from me. But when I, as I do that, there's no one to light me up because I'm already the light, you know. So you don't have to bring in another light to light up the light, right? So I recognize myself, but I am the self that is that recognition, in a sense. I am the self-evident self which has been differentiated from all of these things that had been superimposed on me. So it's a very different type of knowing. So now what he says is, the one who knows this, who knows myself as I am, you know, how can I, this me, kill? How can I kill or cause somebody to be killed? Because in fact, this very self, as will be seen, the very me that I am, is the me that you are, is the non-objectifiable me. What hands do I have? What feet do I have? What mind do I have? You know, what prana do I have? That all of these things are there. They all have me. For them to exist, they depend totally on me for their being, for their consciousness. But I don't depend upon them. All of them are known. They all come and go into the knownness of my own being. This is known, this is known, this is known, this healthy body is known, this quiet mind is known, this sorrow is known. Every experience I have is known. That means objectified. Every experience I have comes into being and goes out of being. I don't come into being and go out of being. I am, period. I'm not an object. If I'm not an object, what can I do? I'm not speaking. I'm not wielding a weapon. For me, there is no doing at all. And that is who I am. All of this activity is going on. It's not to deny the experience, all these experiences. All of these experiences are going on. They have their same, they have their own order of reality. But that order of reality is similar, not the same, but similar to the dream order of reality. In the dream, the character that you're identified with, you do so many things. You do good things and you do bad things. You may have even done some really bad thing, and then you're so happy when you wake up. Thank goodness I didn't do that. Or say in the dream something happens and somebody steals your purse or something, or steals your wallet, and then you say, oh, now how am I going to manage? Or, you know, and then you wake up and you're so relieved, oh, none of that really happened. But when you're in the middle of it, it's happening, right? It's happening. It's not that you're not, you're experiencing it. You're going through everything. You're experiencing all those laws. Everything's taking place. But it's when you wake up, you realize, ah, that's all Ishwara. That's all the play. You know? And so here now, what needs to happen, it's not you're not going to lose your sense of reality and say, oh, this is all a big illusion. You know? It's an illusion that has a lot of order and a lot of laws. You know? It has science. It has math. You know? It has illness and health. It has all of these things. But while all of this is going on, I am not doing anything. I am always the same. My being is always whole and complete. No matter what takes place, no matter what is taking place, you can differentiate, learn to differentiate now, between the beauty and the fullness and the wholeness of your own being, which is there ever-present, amidst all of this stuff that is going on, for better or for worse, for good or for bad. We can do so many good things to, in this world, follow Dharma, keep our health, you know, live a clean life, to have good experiences here. But these good experiences or bad experiences aren't changing me, because I'm a different order of reality. It's not the same order of reality. It's like I can experience a snake and react to the snake and go through all kinds of different emotions around the snake and have all kinds of different relationships with the snake, you know. But when I realize that it's not a snake, it's a rope, right, then everything kind of changes for me. So here I can have so many experiences of this creation, so many experiences of my mind, so many experiences of my relationship. But once I recognize that all of these experiences take place in their own order of reality, but I'm fine, no matter what the experience, I am fine, and that I am whole and complete, and nothing ever touches that, nor do I ever do anything to that. So my mind, enjoying myself, enjoys tremendous freedom. Yeah, but people can still be killing. The dream character kills and causes other people to kill, you know, and suffers accordingly. Say if you have a dream and somebody's committing a murder in the dream, or somebody goes to war and all everything's blown up and hundreds of people are killed, all of that is happening within that order of reality. But for the one who's the self of the dream, all of that is happening and nothing is happening. It's all happening, and at the same time, I'm completely free. And so we need to recognize both orders of reality, right? If I'm only myself and there's nothing happening and there's no universe that's happening, I don't have to worry about anything. I'm just free. I am as I am. All is well. But if I'm a character in the dream, if I'm a character in this world, you know, having to live this out, then it's kind of nice to know, you know, who I am in this whole thing, who I am, and what is my relationship of myself to this world and my relationship to you. And so what he says here is just starting now. It's really beautiful. He says, the one who knows the self, yourself, that person doesn't do anything, doesn't do any action, nor cause any action. That's not to say that the mind doesn't think and the sense organs don't work and the body doesn't do things and you don't make decisions. But all of that is taking place in an order of reality that has you for its truth, for its being. But you don't depend upon it. It depends upon you. You don't depend upon it. So you need to recognize who we really are. And then you always, in that recognition, you recognize that what we mean by ananda, this is what these verses all be getting to, what we mean by ananda, or wholeness, or fullness, or well-being, that's inviolate. Your wholeness, your well-being is inviolate. It's your nature. And the world doesn't change it. It's like the dream world is not changing your nature. But even in the dream world, the dream character has self-ignorance. So while the dream character is going on, the dream world is going on, the dream character, if it's a bad situation, is freaking out and experiencing all of that. It doesn't have the oasis of my being because it's never differentiated it. It's only differentiating the various experiences. That's what we're doing. We're just engaged in all these experiences, never recognizing the one in whom those experiences are taking place. So the me, the one who is here, is whole and complete, no matter what these experiences are, then let these experiences be. Let me be with them. You know, there's no reason to reject them or be afraid of them because nothing's happening to me. But that can't just be some hypothetical concept. We have to see, wow, really nothing's happening to me. I am here and nothing touches me at all. So I can be engaged in the world, and I can be engaged with you and with you fully because I'm not afraid. I'm not going to lose myself because of something I do to you or you do to me. I'm always the same. It's great to be with friends who have some knowledge. They can, when you're kind of going off a little bit, you know, how we do, go off, we get angry or upset, you go, it's okay. And you'll give them that same, it's okay. Just your mind. Just your mind is going off a little bit here. You'll come back. It's all right. I know who you are. You're just going bonkers for the time being, but it won't last that long. It won't last that long. It'll settle down. It'll settle down, and you'll be back. So it's okay. I'll just wait. I'll just wait it out. No problem. Yeah. And they'll do that for you, too. So you don't have to give a little freedom to everybody to be as they are. Yeah, it's a nice thing. Because you know who they are. We'll see that. We haven't really moved into that. But the fact is that the self that I am, it's not an object in the world. And so there can only really be one of us. Because there's no time and space. I'm not an object in the world to be different from you. So this conscious being that I am, we have to see that. What am I and who are you? Who am I and who are you? If I'm just pure conscious being and you're just pure conscious being and you're just pure conscious being, just me, then what's separating us? Well, space, of course, but space is objectifiable. So we'll look at that. Let's do that next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om